Welcome back to the Border Patrol and Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thanks for joining us. It's Tuesday, March 27, 2018. We have Brian McCray, Gary Lezak, Jamie Bluma on the show. And you, thank you very much for listening to us. Thanks for watching us on 38 The Spot every morning from 6 until 7. And thank you for listening right now on 810 as we transition to a little thing called college basketball. Ever heard of it? Yeah, I think you have. If you have it, what the hell's wrong with you? But the point is, CJ Moore writes about it.
Ever heard of that one, Stan?
At The Athletic. And he talks about it on this show quite a bit. Hello, CJ. How are you?
Doing well. What's going on?
Answer for Bruce Weber now.
Bruce! You got it done.
You know, I will tell you this, whether you're a K-State fan or not, this season has been quite entertaining with all the ups and downs and everything else. And the way I look at it is this. If you would have told a K-State fan before the season, look, you're going to finish in the top four in the Big 12, you're going to have a record above 500 in what is recognized as the best conference in the nation, and you're going to make a run to the Elite Eight. I mean, who wouldn't have signed up for that, right?
Yeah, they would have told you were crazy, right? Well, no chance.
They told me that anyway. But but I guess it feels different because they lost to an 11 seed Loyola Chicago. But I'm going to tell you what, I've seen a lot of 11 seeds, and the last one that was this good was VCU. And you we know they weren't a joke with Shaka Smart and all that talent. So, I mean, how should – I guess we can't really tell K-State fans how they should feel, but what should be taken away from K-State losing to Loyola in the fashion that they did by let's be honest, Loyola Chicago dominated K-State.
Yeah, I would say Loyola Chicago's much better than that VCU team was. I mean, that team barely snuck into the tournament. Loyola was good all year, won their league, won their league tournament. So, I think that's a much better team than VCU was. And I think you can't just simply look at that game. I think you have to look at the run. And the fact that they got to the Elite Eight without Dean Wade basically playing at all is pretty remarkable. I mean, not only did they make the Elite Eight, but they didn't have their best player. So, if you put him in that game, I think it's a totally different game. And to beat Kentucky without him was pretty remarkable.
And for me, like you could be a negative Nancy or negative Nate and look at it and say, well, the UMBC was a 16 seed. Well, they lost to Loyola. Or you could choose to look at it and say, hey, they played Creighton. Creighton was the 8th seed. They had Marcus Foster, and K-State beat them without Dean Wade. And then to validate that, they beat a good Kentucky team that was red hot, that had won the SEC tournament, that looked like they were headed to the Final Four, and they beat Kentucky, basically, without Dean Wade. So for me, those two wins validate what they did in March, and especially now when you got all that coming back next year. I mean, I get it. It's bitterly disappointing to be so close to the Final Four and not get there, but to take a step back and take a look at where they are now and where they're headed, you have to feel good about it if you're a K-State fan.
For sure, and the rotation's a little deeper than maybe you thought it was with some of the kids that stepped up in Wade's absence. So, I think they have to feel pretty good about where they are as a program right now and definitely about next season. I mean, I think there should be more optimism around K-State basketball maybe than there's been a while, just, returning this whole roster. I don't foresee anybody leaving, like, sure, Dean Wade or Barry Brown could test the waters, but I guarantee you the feedback they would receive is go back to school. So I think everybody will return, and it should be an exciting offseason and exciting preseason next year for K-State.
All right, let's talk about the Kansas Jayhawks, and they're going to the Final Four. This game against Duke, how good of a game, in your estimation, was that one?
One of the best I've ever seen in the tournament. I think it was the game of the tournament. The only two I've probably seen live that were were better were 2008 national title game, and then the North Carolina Villanova game a couple of years ago when Chris Jenkins hit the shot. Probably still put that one above it, but one of the best tourney games I'd ever seen. Two high level teams going at it, matching shots late. I mean, it had a great coaching matchup. I thought the chess match kind of between Coach K and Bill Self was interesting to watch, and it had a little bit of everything. So I enjoyed it.
Before you knew Kansas was going to win against Duke, would you have said that Duke or Villanova was the tougher matchup for Kansas?
I think Villanova is the better team. I probably would have told you that Duke was maybe a slightly more difficult matchup just because of Marvin Bagley, and it was hard to see how KU was going to handle him. But, man, Stephen Kylik did a hell of a job.
So you were the guy that asked the question, and we played it yesterday, of Bill Self about his history in the Elite Eight and what it means to get over that hump again. And he didn't hide from it. I mean, to his credit, he said, look, it's a fair question, and our record hasn't been good enough in the Elite Eight. Do you believe that does this stop that conversation? Or if he loses in the Elite Eight again next year, then people start having it again? And was that ever a fair conversation in the first place in your mind?
I don't think it necessarily stops it, especially if they, like, next year have a great season and then lose in the Elite Eight again. But I don't think it's an entirely fair conversation to have, just because I think if you get there over and over again, and, you know, it's the tournament's fickle, and it's really kind of silly to make judgments based off one game. Like, you know, there are some people saying that, oh, you can't win with one and dones because Duke didn't make the Final Four. Well, Duke was one roll away from making a Final Four. And, you know, I wrote the column last year after Kansas lost, because I knew a lot of people were going to come after Self. But, like, they just lost to a really good team that was really hot and had a guy in Jordan Bell who kind of dominated the game. And I don't think you can come after Self too hard for his struggles in the Elite Eight. I do think that his teams have played a little tight in those games, and that was what really, you know, good for Kansas fans to see them come out and play so loose against Duke. And now you kind of want to see him, I guess, play one of these games in the Elite Eight where they are favored to win, where everybody expects them, and maybe they play a school where, you know, all the pressure's on Kansas, and kind of see how they handle that. I guess that's the next step in the Bill Self struggles in the Elite Eight narrative.
Yeah, because, I mean, it does seem like that's when they've had their biggest issues, right? Is when they've maybe when the bracket, quote unquote, has fallen for them. And and this time around, they got the toughest matchup. And it almost seems like, in a way, that was a good thing for them.
Yeah, and I think one of the quotes he had was during that little stretch there, you know, after the game, was telling, when he said that they did in the past, it's like they focused on, okay, we got to get to the Final Four. Like, that's the focus. Like, we can't screw this up. We got to get to the Final Four. And on Sunday, they were focused on, like, the game. Like, let's just go out and play Duke and enjoy it and beat these dudes. And it wasn't looking ahead what's next. It was focused on the game. And, I do think that mentality was more what it needed to be than the, you know, last year, not just from Kansas players, but I think the Sprint Center didn't help Kansas at all last year. There was like a nervous energy in that building and intention that I think affected the team. And, you know, it's the guys in the program, the fan base, like, everybody has felt it. And so to go out and get that win, you know, definitely helps. And, you know, next year, I feel like if they get in that same game, like, they'll probably come at it in a from a better place than they have in the past.
Okay, let's talk about Villanova. It's going to be a hell of a game. It looks like a hell of a game on paper, and we think it'll play out that way. The last time Villanova lost was a road game at Creighton. They've won 9 in a row since then, including so every game they've won in the tournament has been by double digits. Mm-hmm. They beat Alabama, and then they beat back-to-back Big 12 teams in West Virginia and Texas Tech. And so you tell us, give us a scouting report on Villanova, why they're so good, and the problems they could pose for Kansas on Saturday night.
Well, defensively, that was kind of the knock on them early, midway through the year, that they weren't a great defensive team. But they've really turned it on and now look like a normal Villanova defensive team. They don't make mistakes. They're really, really sound. And then offensively, the same thing. They play for a team that spreads you out and shoots a lot of threes, which they have five guys on the floor usually that can shoot the three. They actually play at a little bit slower pace, and they're really, really patient. I mean, they can get into late clock situation, and there's like 5 seconds left on the clock, and they'll make two more passes to get a great shot. And that's what really stands out to me, just their discipline and just how sound they are on both ends. You know, it starts with Jalen Brunson. The dude's like a 35-year-old guy playing in point guard. He's like the old guy at the Y that's just, you know, smarter than everybody else. So he's a huge key. He's a tough kid. I think I could see Malik Newman matching up on him because he'll post up some. I don't think you want Devontae Graham guarding a guy that goes in the post. But so that's a big matchup. Then the other big matchup to me is Omari Spellman versus Udoka Azubuike. Whoever can get the other one in foul trouble, I think will be a key, because I don't think Villanova has anybody else on their roster that can guard Udoka. And, you know, Spellman, Udoka's going to have a couple inches on him, but Spellman's a really, really good three-point shooter and can drive, like can take people off the bounce, even though he's a big, thick dude. So that can kind of, you know, when Udoka's on defense, I think that's going to be a tough matchup for him. So that's the one that I kind of have circled and will be watching early on in that game to see how that plays out.
And that's exactly who I was going to ask you about, because whenever I've watched Villanova in this tournament, I've been very impressed by Omari Spellman. And like you said, 6'9", 245, he averaged just under 11 points and almost 8 rebounds a game. But what stands out to you is he's almost a 45% three-point shooter. And so that is going to be a unique matchup problem. So how will they handle that, the idea that Spellman not only can handle himself down low, but he's going to take you outside, and he is a real threat from three?
Yeah, I think Udoka's just got to get out on the floor and guard. I mean, maybe Bill Self will throw out some kind of junk defense, but the difficult thing about playing Nova is everybody can shoot it. So you can't, like against Duke, for instance, they double-team Bagley with Devontae Graham and left Trevon Duvall open from three because he's a terrible shooter. Well, Nova, they're not going to put many bad shooters on the floor. Like, there's a couple guys on their bench that can't shoot, but you know, maybe one guy at a time, and it's usually a big guy. So for the most part, they usually put five shooters on the floor. So Kansas is just going to have to, you know, guard them straight up, and Udoka is going to have to get out on the floor. It could, you know, it could be another game where you see quite a bit of Silvio De Sousa. So we'll see how it plays out.
It's amazing how much all of a sudden they're leaning on De Sousa. Just, you know, from a couple of weeks ago, maybe what we saw from him. How does he match up if he has to play another 26 minutes in this game like he did last week?
I honestly think he's a little bit better maybe guarding out on the floor than he is in the post. I mean, defense is like the main issue he has, I think. And the one nice thing about the Duke game was I don't think he's mastered the offense entirely yet. Like, until that Clemson game, every time he was in, Kansas would run the same play over and over again. It's claw is the call, and it'd be a high screen, re-screen, you know, near the top of the key. And finally, it seemed like they ran a few more plays when he was in. But against Duke, against the zone, I mean, he just basically had to be on the baseline, so it was like a perfect game for him. So, but I do think he's patched Mitch Lightfoot by, and Self, you know, is trusting him a little bit more. But yeah, just because he can move a little better, this might be a better game for him, although with Udoka and the challenge he presents to Nova's defense, you know, I think he's going to get plenty of minutes if he can stay out of foul trouble.
C.J. Moore is our guest. All right, let's take a look at the other matchup between Loyola and Michigan before we get into Sister Jean's Ramblers. Nobody's talking about Michigan because obviously everyone around here talking about Kansas. Villanova, I think most people feel like the machine right now that maybe depending on who you ask could be the favorite to win it all, and then Loyola is everyone's darling Cinderella of the tournament, and then there you have Michigan, and Michigan is a real threat to win this whole thing. They're a hell of a basketball team. So tell us what we need to know about Michigan and whether you think they have a real chance to win this whole deal.
Well, from a talent standpoint, there's not much of a gap between them and Loyola. And then there is a gap between them and Kansas and Nova. So, you know, if they play in the national championship game, like, they're going to be, from a talent standpoint, those teams are, one of those teams is going to be, you know, not significantly better, but a decent amount better. Like, Michigan's maybe got one pro on its roster. Mo Wagner is, you know, probably going to get drafted. But other than that, I don't know that they have a guy that will eventually get drafted. So the difference between this team and most John Beilein teams is they're just okay on offense, and they're elite on the defensive end. That starts with Xavier Simpson, their point guard. Like, he just basically takes away the opposing team's point guard and makes them, you know, game miserable for him. So I'm not counting out Michigan, though, because in a one-game setting where you have to prepare for John Beilein's two-guard offense, which is something he's a guy, you know, a lot of these coaches go to coaching clinics and will share the kind of stuff they do. Beilein will not. Like, he doesn't share anything. He keeps everything to himself.
I like that.
And it's tough to prepare for his offense, especially given just one day to prep, because you don't see it that often. It's kind of unique. And then he's just one of the best tactical coaches in the country. So they'll be prepared for that title game if they get there, and they're going to be a tough team to play. But I would favor Kansas or Nova just because, you know, they also have great coaches on their side, and I think their talent's better. And Michigan's, you know, it's not as great a shooting team as you usually see out of Michigan. Man, they really, really guard, which is kind of weird for a Michigan team the way they've been the last few years.
So what do you think is going to happen between Michigan and Loyola?
I think Michigan ends up winning it, but I think it'll be a pretty close game. Like I said, the gap's not that big in talent. I think Loyola could play with them. I wouldn't be shocked if Loyola gets out of there. I mean, when you've got two Kansas City guards in your backcourt, that toughness that they bring, I mean, the Ramblers got a shot, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
of course.
And again, I go back to just the way they dismantled Kansas State. I mean, I don't know how much of that was Kansas State still thinking about the Kentucky game or whatever else, but I mean, so they've won three games by 4 points, so you know they're not going to get rattled in end game situations. They've come through, and that gives you, and you've seen this enough, CJ, that gives a team such a confidence that, okay, if we're close at the end, we're going to win the game. And so the situation hasn't been too big for them. Then they just go out and they run K-State off the floor. And so they got to be flying high right now as far as their belief that they could pretty much do whatever they want on the court and it's going to come out right.
Yeah, and they're a great defensive team, just like Michigan, and they're an actually better shooting team. And, you know, they've beat teams that are just as good and just as talented as Michigan. Tennessee's, I would say, is just as good as Michigan. They beat Florida earlier this year at Florida. Florida's talent's probably better than Michigan's talent. So, you know, I wouldn't count them out of this. Like, I think it'll be a pretty good game, and I think they match up pretty well with Michigan. Like, Mo Wagner's probably the toughest guy to guard, but you saw them against Nevada go small and bring Cameron Crudwig, you know, take him off the floor. And, you know, that's something that they've shown they can do, and they might end up doing in this game, just because you have to be able to switch screens and you know, get out and guard Michigan's big men, Wagner, specifically out on the three-point line. So I think that they've got the weapons to play with them.
Okay, so like for the mid-major teams we've seen advance this far, we already mentioned VCU, George Mason, Butler. They made two national championship games, but
Wichita State, you know, back when they made the Final Four, was kind of considered it,
right?
You know,
so how does this Loyola, like you said, you think this Loyola team's better than VCU was when VCU beat Kansas and went to the Final Four? What about like the Butler team that was an 8 seed, or George Mason, or like Nate said, Wichita State? Is Loyola the best of all of them, or are they kind of similar to any of those?
I would say the first Butler team that made it, they're not as good as them, because remember that team had Gordon Hayward, who was, you know, who's like an NBA All-Star. But the second Butler team, they're probably closer to that group. I think they're better than VCU, better than George Mason, and probably not quite as good as that Wichita State team that made it, who, I mean, gave Louisville a really, really good game. And you know, obviously the Cards went on to win the title, which doesn't count anymore, but they did win it. But yeah, I think they're probably right in the middle of that group. But one you know, close to that second Butler team that made the national title game. So I wouldn't be shocked to see them in the title game on Monday.
That'd be something else. I mean, can you imagine that? If you're those two kids, Kansas City kids who grew up in Kansas, you already beat Kansas State, and then you could very well end up playing Kansas in the national championship game. I mean, if somebody wrote that script,
that'd be hell of a story.
If somebody wrote that script, like, that's not believable. You don't know what you're talking about. But here we go. You might be writing the story about that, CJ. Hey, man, we appreciate the time. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
That's CJ Moore from The Athletic. Because even like when you say it, like, that didn't happen. It could. As long as Michigan doesn't screw it up. Who do you think is going to win that game between Loyola and Michigan?
I mean, I think Michigan is, but I haven't thought Loyola was going to win a game for about four rounds.
And let me guess. Jake now loves John Beilein because he refuses to share anything with anyone. Right?
Oh, I love him.
Now he's skyrocketing to the top of your coaching chart.
It doesn't hurt that I had them in the Final Four, but
I looked up the twinkle in his eye. John Beilein doesn't go to any of this stuff. He doesn't share anything with anybody. And it's like, screw you.
He's like, no, nope, not telling you nothing.
Because hey, I turned to Mean Mug. I was like, that's great.
Hey,
you
coach,
know?
We got a clinic if you'd like to come out there. Nope.
Nope.
All right.
Uh-uh.
Talk to you later.
That's my style, dude. I like that. I like John Beilein.
I got one of John Beilein.
Yeah.
When he was West, remember?
I remember, yeah.
The buyout, and I wanted Missouri to chase him. That was never going to happen, but I was, you know.
Was that when they hired Mike Anderson?
I tried to convince myself, he's a St. Louis Cardinals fan. He'll want
to. He had some family ties to the area,
sure.
Too.
I think a brother in St. Louis. But anyway, he's just a fantastic coach.
He is. And they did that special on the young man Hatch who is in the two plane crash,
right.
And that was a great piece on CBS and John Beilein. I mean, CJ said he doesn't share a whole lot, and so when you see him on camera and do interviews and talk about that stuff and open up, it's a different side, you know, because you watch him when they showed a little piece of him in practice, he's all business. I mean, he's buttoned up and all business, and so. when CJ said that, I'm like, yeah, I can get down with that.
You know what really I've set myself up for here, fellas?
Villanova, Michigan final.
I am so, that's a good way to put it. I can be so jaded and negative at times and you know, in my bad moods or whatever else.
No.
And I'm going to tell you this. I'm being honest with you. And you keep making fun of me, but I don't care. I'm going to keep telling you. Whenever I see this wonderful sister Jean, it just puts a smile on my face. I don't know.
You do love it.
She reminds me of my grandmother. I don't know, but she's sitting there, and I mean, she's happy, and I'm seeing her hugging the players, and I just like when she went to that press conference she got her hat turned backwards, and they asked her because that's the way the players wear it. You're damn right, sister Jean. You wear it the way the players wear it, and she's just, you know, she's 98 years old. She's having the time of her life. She's having so much fun. And you see it, and it's, like, so special, like, the relationship with her and the players. And so it's, like, every time, no matter what my mood has been, every time they show her, and I get, Sister Jean. And it's just, like, she's the light of my life right now. And so when they lose, it is going to crush me to see her cry or to see her get upset. As happy as it's made me to see her with joy and happiness, I'm telling you this. I'm not prepared to see Sister Jean cry and sad.
Oh, she won't cry.
It's going to hurt me. How do you know that if she does? It's going to break my damn heart.
She won't cry. The cries of tears of joy that they made it that far.
And I'm going to be in Chicago. And so if they lose, they go, I'm going to seek her out maybe if they lose.
Go welcome them back.
Tell her I'm sorry.
She's got a Secret Service now.
What? She needs to be protected.
She's got four guards that they're following her around now.
She got two guards, Clayton Custer and Ben Richardson. I'll tell you that.
That's right. She does.
And like when Clayton Custer went up and told her, said, Sister Jean, we broke your bracket. She's like, that's okay. Just keep on winning, you know?
Better talk to her with respect.
With her Velcro shoes.
Yeah.
Maybe I should buy some. I'm going to wear Velcro shoes on Saturday and watch that game. You know?
I got a buddy who owns a pair of Ruse. They apparently still sell them. You can still get them.
Put stuff in the little pocket there.
Yeah, a little pouch on the side.
You guys do not share my love of Sister Jean, do you?
I like Sister Jean. She reminds me of Hermana Agnes from when I was at Bishop Ward High School. who was about the same age and taught us Spanish class at the time. She was great.
I think the nuns that I had the best relationships with, well, when I was in grade school, Sister Mary Lee was our music teacher, and she hit me in the face with a ruler. Mm-hmm. And so then my mom had to go up there, and then we all decided that I deserved it. And so then,
yeah, I was going to say well, whatever. That. Yeah.
My dad's like, sounds like he had it coming.
So yeah. you're not a fan of Jalen Rose's grandma?
I've heard about this. I don't know. But then, and then I've told you, Sister Mary Sharon from St. Pius, who still owes me $50 for, well, we're not going to get into that. And then, rest in peace, Sister Regina Mary Link, who was the librarian who was in charge of me at study hall. So let me ask you a question. What do you think it was like to be in charge of me during a study hall my senior year? Because I, for reasons that will not be revealed, could not, I was removed from a class. So now you're in study hall, and so she was in charge of me. Do you think that went well?
I'm sure she loved it. I'm sure she loved it.
Made you sit in
she
the tried. Desk right in front of her.
No, I was putting books up, and I was doing those.
Sit down.
You know, organizing here. The periodicals and doing things and making copies and pointing people in the right direction and hiding behind books. I don't know.
So this is Jalen Rose's grandma.
She's 100 years old, right?
Yeah. Yep. She
so
is.
Jalen Rose's 100-year-old grandmother.
Grammy. They call her Grammy.
What happened? Is this real? Is it really his grandmother?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. She's donning a Michigan basketball T-shirt, and you know she's in her chair, and she's got her Michigan hat on.
What did she say?
Gene, it's been a good ride, but it's over Saturday. Go Blue, 100.
Oh, that's a great video, too.
She's keeping it 100.
All right.
Because she's 100.
You have to.
Yeah.
Grammy's coming for you, Gene. Go Blue. 100.
Hell. I don't think Aunt Jerry qualifies as Sister Gene.
I don't want her to be said
mom,
either.
But Aunt Jerry's going down to, she's driving down to San Antonio with my sister. Maybe we can check in with them as they're in the car on the way down.
How would you like to be in that car? Would you? I mean, I don't know.
It'd be fun. I used to go on long car rides with Aunt Jerry. Took me down to Dallas to visit my uncle once when I was a little kid. She's fun. She got the kids singing songs in the car, playing games, all kinds of fun. She's the fun aunt. But she says, Duke sucks.
Do you have another aunt listening by any chance?
Well, actually, I have a couple. Aunt Barbie.
I'm just saying the way you've labeled her. She's the fun
she's
aunt.
She's the fun
like,
aunt. Because the rest of them.
Aunt,
no,
like,
aunt Barbie's a really fun aunt,
oh,
too.
Oh, okay, smart-ass Nate. I'm not the, what aunt am I?
Come
I'm just
to
trying
think
to protect
it,
you here.
Come to think of it.
Because when you say the fun aunt.
All my aunts are fun.
Not,
I have
not
an
what
incredibly
you just said,
fun group of aunts.
Jake, if you're another aunt of Nate Buchanan right now, you
I mean, I don't hear about any of the other aunts.
I'm just saying that he said she's the fun aunt, and if you're another aunt, like, okay.
I hate the way you try to
well, it is your
to
word.
Draw,
you said.
Did she get invited? Like, she was
to,
the one
to fight you. You try
no,
to draw me into fights.
Protect
no.
you.
I mean, she got the invite for Family Feud. I mean, she's, you know, taking her all the basketball games. I mean, that's.
I'm not going to the basketball
game. I'm just saying you've taken her to games. I know that she's, you know,
look,
she's
you go,
gone
good?
To Kansas games with you before, right?
Well, she has her own tickets. I mean, yeah.
But you've gone with her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes,
you don't go with any other aunts, do you?
I try to protect you because when you say the
no,
fun
I'm glad
aunt,
you said that because
you know I mean?
My Aunt Barbie is tremendously fun. My Aunt Kim is fantastically
see, now
fun
I feel like
as well.
This is all lip service. You're just doing this.
They're fun in different ways.
Like fun.
What's that?
Aunt Barbie sounds
Aunt
like
Aunt Barbie's
fun.
Awesome. You guys don't understand. She was...
Well, I
wanna. Just...
About Uncle Ken.
No.
There's no Uncle Ken.
No.
Aunt Barbie? Uncle Aunt, Ken.
Yeah.
No.
When are they leaving?
Aunt Barbie's from KCK.
When are they hitting the road?
Player dog.
To San Antonio.
100.
I think they're leaving on Friday. Driving down on Friday. My sister, Aunt Jerry, and my two nephews.
Will they bring some stuff back for me?
What do you need them to bring back? Some hot sauce?
No, we'll talk.
All right.
After the show.
San Antonio?
Back after this on WHB.